Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, this Ash Wednesday edition of Catholic Answers Live. If you haven't had a chance to go yet, most parishes have an evening mass that you can make it to, and you're welcome to go whether you're Catholic or not. If you'd like to receive the ashes and carry those with you out into the world, and I hope you do. And if you haven't been to a Catholic mass, come and sit and see what happens at a Catholic mass. I don't think we invite people enough to come to mass here. And then sometimes people get nervous. They're like, well, they can't go to communion. You have to say they can't go. I have to say everything. But
that does cause a bit of stress, I must say.
I know. People get so anxious about it. Anyways, this hour, Carlo Broussard is our guest. And we're going to talk about obstacles to belief in Jesus. I'll tell you what, if there's any obstacles in your life, if you can overcome the obstacles to belief in Jesus, everything's going to be all right. I can guarantee you everything's going to be all right. So this is about the most important topic we can do. Carlo is the author of a couple books, Prepare the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. And his most recent, Meeting the Protestant Challenge, How to Answer 50 Biblical Objections to Catholic Belief. Carlo, welcome.
Hey, Si. Thanks for having me, brother.
I'm so happy to see your ashes.
Yeah, they're kind of fading away. They were pretty thick this morning there.
I think I get itchy or something, and I rub them or something, because I look in the mirror and I'm like, what happened?
Yeah, I was at the gym and I was on the stationary bike, you know,
Then
I put my head down and I put my head on my... my hand, and I was like, wait.
So we did get our ashes this morning, if you're seeing us on the video. Yeah, that's probably what happened to mine. It was probably when I was lifting earlier. Why is that funny? I was bench pressing, what's a good amount?
Well, Jared Zimmer, I think, can get 425.
Yeah, max. I was only doing about 418, but I probably smudged my ashes. 888-318-7884 is the number. If you have a question about overcoming obstacles to belief in Jesus, whether it's yourself, maybe there's something stopping you from believing in Jesus, or maybe it's for a friend, a loved one, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Let me just suggest some folks who might want to call. Maybe you're looking and you just can't close the deal. You just can't bring yourself to acknowledge that Jesus and Christianity are true. We'd love to speak with you, 888-318-7884. Or maybe you are not in the looking, but you've just decided, no, Jesus and Christianity are not for me. If you have objections, we'd love to hear those as well. Or perhaps you are someone who is engaged in evangelizing others, and there's a common objection or a hard objection that you'd like to be able to help people pass. 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. And as I said, Carlo Broussard, our guest this hour, and this is what he does. He helps people overcome objections. Carlo?
Yeah.
Look, what if I have an objection like this? Look, there's no way to know whether the Gospels are accurate history or not.
Yeah.
I don't know. Why should I believe in Jesus? How can I even do it when you've basically got these books that you can't gauge the accuracy of?
Right. Yeah, this is a big question because it's a starting point, right? Before we can even begin investigating the claims of Jesus, we have to first establish the reliability of those sources from which we're getting the claims,
yes,
right, of Jesus. And so one way that we can do this, there's a helpful acronym that I got from a friend of mine, Scott Sullivan, and I think he got it from Dr. Craig Blomberg, a New Testament scholar, and it's AID, A-I-D. The gospel writers were able to write reliable history, they intended to write reliable history, and they did write reliable history. And I articulate this in summary form in my book, in one of the chapters of my book, Prepare the Way, where I coach you in ways to help a skeptic overcome this particular obstacle of doubt about the reliability of the Gospels. And there's a few ways, many ways in which we can establish each of those points. But just like, for example, one, they were able to write reliable history, number one, because two of the four gospel writers were eyewitnesses, Matthew and John. Mark and Luke were close associates of eyewitnesses.
Right.
So they would have had, we have eyewitness accounts, and that's gold, you know, when we're looking at ancient documents and records of ancient events.
Right.
You have close associates, so they would have had access to those eyewitness accounts. So that works in favor to the gospel writers being able to write reliable history. You also have the fact that they wrote within close temporal proximity of the events that they're recording relative to other ancient records of events, records of ancient events, right? So scholars, I think, put forward very persuasive arguments that the gospel writers, at least the synoptics, wrote no later than AD 62 for sure, because the book of Acts is written in AD 62. That puts Luke's gospel before that. We know Mark and Matthew wrote before that. So they're writing within or right at 30 years after the events that they were recording, right? And then, of course, John would write later in the first century, right around AD 90 or so, right? And so that puts it right at 60 years after the events they're recording. Well, compare that to, for example, the biographies of Alexander the Great and Siddhartha of the Buddha, right?
Yeah.
Siddhartha Gautama the Buddha, which are written over 400 years
after
the events that they're recording. So relative to other ancient documents and biographies of ancient people and events, the New Testament gospel writers, they stand out above all the others, right? And you can even look at other examples. If my memory serves me correct, I think it was Julius Caesar, where we have six sources dating from 90 to 100 years after the life of Julius Caesar. So we have good solid grounds that the gospel writers would have been able to write reliable history given that close temporal proximity to the events that they're recording, at least according to the standards of ancient documents. Now, for us modern people, we're like, man, I can't even remember what I ate for lunch 2 weeks ago, right? Much less remember what Jesus said and did 30 years after the fact. Well, listen, they weren't worried about what Jesus ate, except in a few instances where he ate some fish, right?
Yeah.
Pretty phenomenal circumstances. But they were worried about what Jesus taught and what Jesus did, which would have been very impactful upon the apostles. And they didn't just receive a lecture in a flyby lecture hall. They were with him 24/7 for 3 years.
Right.
They would have heard the teachings on multiple occasions, right? They had the opportunity to practice and rehearse those teachings and going out two by two. Scholars point out that it's possible they would have been shorthand note-taking, such as disciples did of rabbis, right? So Matthew was a tax collector. He could have been writing stuff down. And we also have oral sources, right? Scholars point out how there are oral sources that predate the actual written record. So it's not like these gospel writers are just out of the blue all of a sudden saying, oh, I'm going to write down what Jesus said and did, right? I'm going to write a biography, a historical narrative of Jesus's life. No, there would have been oral traditions that had been handed down, sources that predate the written documents. So that puts the content even closer to the events and the sayings and the deeds of Jesus, right? So that's, they were able, we know they intended to write reliable history because, like, for example, Luke in his prologue in Luke chapter 1, verses 1 through 4 tells us that he's setting out to give an orderly account of things and that he's trying to present the facts, and he's relying on eyewitness accounts, right? And he's using like classical Greek versus the Koine Greek just in that little prologue in order to show that, hey, I know what I'm talking about here. He's a competent individual to recount these events in a reliable way, right? And these gospel writers, they're including in their narratives things and details that are subject to verification. So they're dropping big names like Caiaphas the high priest, right? They're dropping the names of Caesar and the time period in which these things are happening.
Right.
That's dissimilar to what you find in mythology, right? Where you have, you don't have details that are rooted in history that are subject to verification. You would think if they were just writing myth, right?
No.
They wouldn't be making their narrative subject to historical investigation.
Yeah, really specific stuff, like in the 15th year of reign of Augustus. Yeah.
Correct, correct. So it's stuff like that, right? And then we actually have non-Christian sources that corroborate some of these individuals, some of these people that they're naming, even John the Baptist and Herod, right? And Caiaphas, the high priest, and Pontius Pilate. So we have those non-Christian sources from Cornelius Tacitus and the first century Jewish historian Flavius Josephus, where they're confirming and corroborating some of the details that these gospel writers are putting forward. And so that tells us they did write history, at least in some on some points, right?
Yeah.
And then when we look at the whether they wrote history or not, we have archaeological evidence that can corroborate some of the details, such as the Herodian dynasty. You have also archaeological evidence for like the Pool of Bethesda, right? You have also what scholars point out, the criteria of historiographical research, certain criteria that historians look to see if a specific saying or a specific event is highly probable, like historically reliable. And whenever you use those criteria and you go through the Gospels and look at each event, particularly many, many, many of the events in the Gospels meet many of those criteria, like multiple independent attestation, right? Or the embarrassment criterion, stuff like that.
Yes.
And so that tells us these events are historically reliable. And so that gives it, all of this taken together, it gives us good reason that we can actually trust these New Testament documents to actually begin telling us what Jesus did and said, right?
Yes.
That he claimed to be God, that he performed miracles that we can historically investigate to show that it's historically reliable in order to vindicate those claims to divinity. So that's the sort of stuff we're going to chat about today.
888-318-7884. If you have an obstacle, whether it's your own or someone else's, to belief in Jesus that you'd like to discuss with us, even if that obstacle, is one that you you don't particularly want to overcome, you just want to share it with us, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Carlo Broussard is our guest. We'll take a quick break and be right back to get to calls right after this.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
The Church has 2,000 years of wisdom to share on what it takes to live life gracefully.
We're so overwhelmed by how much our faith has transformed our marriage and family especially. We want everyone to experience the incredible gift that the Catholic vision of life and love really is.
More to Life with Dr. Greg and Lisa Popchak. Tomorrow morning, 10 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
No, not Augustus, Tiberius. I said, okay, you corrected me. It didn't sound right when I said it.
But well, I must admit, I was thinking Tiberius,
and then I said Augustus, yeah.
I almost said Tiberius, but then you said Augustus, so I started thinking, well, man, maybe am I wrong?
I'm so happy that I could intimidate you that way with my Bible knowledge.
It's amazing, man, when you're on the radio.
Right.
Things don't function like they normally do.
No, you don't feel sure of things that in other places you feel sure of. You're like, I don't know. 888-318-7884, the number 888-318-7884. We're talking about overcoming obstacles to Jesus. If you have an obstacle to belief in Jesus, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Let us go straight to Christopher. Christopher dropped, so I'm just going to read you the question if that's all right, since I said his name now. Christopher in New Orleans, Louisiana, listening on the almighty 690 AM. My friend says he is religious but not Catholic. How can I explain to him why being Catholic specifically is very important?
Yeah, it's too bad Christopher dropped. It would have been nice to talk to
a
fellow Cajun there, Louisianian there from New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
So this actually ties in, I think, to our topic today concerning belief in Jesus, right? Why should we be Catholic? The answer to that question, I think the bottom line, it all boils down to the fact that Jesus Christ established the church, right? So if you're religious, well, then I suppose my first question would want to be, well, what do you think about Jesus, right? Because before we can even begin talking about whether we should be Catholic, we have to first answer the question, should I believe in Jesus? And if I can answer that question, yes, I should believe in Jesus, not just as some wise teacher or a prophet of some sort, but God made flesh, right? That he is equal to the Father. Well, then I should join the church that he established. So the question becomes, which church is that among all the different Christian communities that we find today? And we would argue, of course, that it's the Catholic Church. So if we could show historically, which I argue we can, that Jesus Christ established the Catholic Church, well then, based on our love for Jesus and our desire to follow Jesus and what he commands and what he teaches, it would follow that we ought to belong to the Catholic Church. So we want to affirm that this individual recognizes, your friend Christopher, if you're listening, recognizes that he's religious. Praise God for that. That's a good first step.
Yeah.
Because he, I would assume, recognizing that he's ordered in some way to some transcendent being beyond himself in which he's going to find his perfection and happiness, right? And so he needs to order his life to that transcendent reality. And then, of course, the question becomes, is Jesus that transcendent reality in the flesh, right? And if so, well, then the question then becomes, should I join the Catholic Church, which I know historically he founded? And of course, the answer would be yes. So whether we should join the Catholic Church is based on whether we believe in Jesus or not. If we do believe in Jesus and he started the Catholic Church, well, then it follows we ought to join it and be a member of it.
Christopher, sorry that the call dropped. You're always welcome to call back, 888-318-7884. We're talking with Carlo Broussard about overcoming obstacles to belief in Jesus. Let's go to John in San Antonio, Texas, listening on the EWTN app. John, you're going to have to put him on. I lost the stack. John,
yeah,
your question.
I called because my sister, she is a non-believer, and she's been a non-believer since she was 14.
Okay.
She took the war religion classes, and she told me that she perceives Jesus as a demigod.
Okay.
And I have also pointed out to others that if he was a demigod, he'd be half human, which would make him imperfect, and therefore he'd be prone to sin.
Okay. All right. Well, I suppose we may, in talking to, I think you said your sister, right? We may have to take a step back because you said she's an unbeliever. And so we may have to take a step back and sort of go through the inquiry as to whether we can trust the Gospels, as we were talking about at the beginning of the broadcast, because in order to challenge your sister's assertion that Jesus is just some sort of lesser divinity, right, we're going to have to appeal to what Jesus says about himself and his self-understanding, which is found in the Gospels. So let's say we can succeed in that task of laying the groundwork of showing, hey, these Gospels are historically reliable and we can trust them. So the question then becomes, okay, so what is the evidence from these historical sources that Jesus understood himself to be not some sort of demigod or a lesser form of divinity, but to be the one true God of Israel, right? And that's key, that he was the God of the Jews, the infinite reality, the creator of heaven and earth. And there are several places that we could look to in the Gospels, but I think one place in particular where Jesus clearly asserts that he is the God of the Jews is in John chapter 8. You could share this with your sister. In John 8, verses 58 through 59, in particular 58, Jesus says, "Before Abraham was, I am." And then we're told in verse 59 that the Jews took up stones to stone him. Now, why are they trying to stone Jesus for saying, "I am"? Well, because when you read that in light of what God revealed to Moses in Exodus 3:14, when God said, "I am who am," there here in John 8:58, we have Jesus ascribing the divine name to himself. And the Jews perceived that to be a claim to be equal to Almighty God. And consequently, they perceived it to be blasphemy, and therefore they wanted to kill him for it. So they picked up stones to stone him. Similarly, Jesus in John chapter 10, you read verses 30 through 33, Jesus says, "I and the Father are one." And guess what happens? They pick up stones to try and stone him yet again. And then John records the reason why the Jews were trying to stone him. He says, the Jews said, we do not stone you for any work, but we stone you because you, a man, have made yourself equal to God. So Jesus is saying things in these two particular examples that leads his Jewish audience to understand him to be saying, I'm your God. I'm the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the flesh. And consequently, they perceive it to be blasphemy and they want to kill him for it. So I think, John, these are two examples among many where you can show, historically speaking, that Jesus did not claim or understand himself to be any sort of lesser divinity like a demigod, but to be the one true God, to be equal to the Father in that divine nature, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so the next question then becomes, John, of course, well, should we believe him? But at least we can show that's what he claimed. And then we reason through the reasonableness of whether we should believe that claim. Of course, it doesn't make sense he's lying about that claim because he's performing miracles within that context of making such claims as that. For example, in Mark 10, he tells a paralytic, your sins are forgiven. Once again, the Jews are perceiving him to be blaspheming because they say in their hearts and minds, who can forgive sins but God alone? And then, of course, rather than correcting their blaspheming thoughts, Jesus actually affirms it in the sense of saying, hey, in order that you may know that the Son of Man has power on earth to forgive sins, he tells the paralytic to get up and go home. So he performs a miracle to vindicate the claim to have the equal power of Almighty God to forgive sins, all right? And so that shows us he's not lying because he's performing these miracles. Then, of course, it's not reasonable to think he's a lunatic because he went toe-to-toe with some of the smartest dudes of his day, and he mopped the floor with them, right?
Yeah.
And that's not evidence of lunacy or a lunatic, right? So the only reasonable option here, you know, stealing from the great C.S. Lewis, is that he is who he says he is, namely Lord, the one Lord, the God of Israel, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
John, thank you very much for your question. Our topic this hour is overcoming obstacles to Jesus. If you're experiencing an obstacle to belief in Jesus, whether it's a belief, maybe you believe Jesus, you believe a lot about Jesus, but you're struggling with coming to a full affirmation that he is what Carlo just said he is, God come among us as a man, then you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. And if the problem is not your own, but is a loved one's, someone else that you know or care about is having trouble coming to a full belief in Jesus, and you'd like to help them overcome an obstacle, 888-318-7884 is the number. We start Lent today. We Catholics and Christians around the world start Lent today or within days of this day. This is the season of Lent, so depending on which community or rite, you may start on, you know, a little earlier or a little later. But for us Latin Rite Catholics, today is the day that we start Lent. And for us, it's a time of trying to be more conformed to Jesus so that we can share in his gospel of love more fully. That's what it's all about. You know what? I'm just thinking as I'm saying that, Carlo, you're probably doing some Lenten talks. You want to give us where you're going to be? Because I know I am.
Yeah, actually, so. I'm going to be on March 8th, 9th, and 10th. I'm going to be at St. Margaret of York in Loveland, Ohio, giving a series of presentations both in the morning on those days and in the evening. I'm going to be talking about the Eucharist, going to be talking about church hierarchy within the Bible, sort of the Bible blueprint for the church. I'm going to be talking about the splendor of the Catholic faith and the great gifts that our Lord has given us in the Catholic Church, namely the Magisterium for truth and the sacraments for life.
St. Margaret of York. We're going to be passing each other.
Oh, really?
Because this weekend, I'm going to be in Ohio.
Oh, fantastic.
I'm going to be in Delaware, Ohio at St. Mary's in Delaware, giving talks after three of the Masses.
Oh, wow.
And I'm just so delighted to get to do it. So Saturday evening and then two of the Sunday Masses, I'll be doing talks.
Good for you. Yeah. And then also in March, I'll be heading up March 19th, 20th, and 21st. I'll be heading up to Eugene, Oregon, to a Catholic church over there. I can't remember the name of the church. I apologize.
I'm going to find it. You tell about
great,
which.
My great friend Paul Chudicorn there, who works over there at the parish, is bringing me in to do a Lenten mission on the Eucharist. And then from there, I'll be going to a parish in Hastings, Michigan to do a Lenten mission on the Eucharist as well.
And wonderful.
Then also on May 2nd, I'm going to be speaking at the Men's Day of Faith Renewal, and that is in St. Mel Parish in Fair Oaks. So I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be a great day.
I feel bad I can't find the Eugene, Oregon one. We'll figure it out.
I got to look at the paperwork. I forgot.
If you want Carla to come and talk wherever you are, just go to CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com. CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com. I'll tell you what, I've seen Carla speak, I don't know, maybe 40 times, maybe 1,000. I'm not sure, but it's been wonderful every time. Just go to CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com. We'll come back and we'll take more calls on Jesus after this.
Everybody's favorite Catholic outer space delivery pilots return for their greatest adventure yet in the brand new graphic novel Weapons of War. Fresh from saving the solar system in The Truth Is Out There and saving the timeline of salvation history in The Big Picture, Brendan and Irk land in a magnificent domed city on Mars for what is supposed to be a simple shuttle job. But soon they find themselves caught up in a sinister assault on faith and freedom. Will Mars be lost to the enemy? Brendan and Irk's only hope for the flight is in the power of God's sacramental gifts. A totally new kind of Catholic resource for apologetics and evangelization, The Truth Is Out There series combines the visual excitement and quirky humor of graphic novels with solid popular philosophy and theology. The result is a series in which everyone from teens to adults can find accessible answers to questions about God, the soul, true happiness, and much more. Order your copy of Weapons of War today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
If you're a Catholic who sometimes gets intimidated by the Bible, Jimmy Akin's The Bible is a Catholic Book will help you better understand and take pride in this gift that God gave the world through the Church. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Catholics are the original Bible Christians. Order your copy of The Bible is a Catholic Book today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
This is Dr. David Anders. Is God an angry God?
We answer questions like these every day on Call to Communion, tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, overcoming obstacles to Jesus this hour. And our guest is Carla Broussard. Lewis in Seattle, Washington, is up next. Lewis, your question for Carlo.
Hey, how's it going? Can you hear me?
We can, Lewis. Yeah. Thank you. Yep, your question for Carlo.
Hi, how's it going? I guess my question was, how can we determine that the Gospels are reliable historical accounts of the resurrection and of, you know, the various stories that surrounds Jesus? And I guess more specifically, to make my question slightly more nuanced, how can we determine that they're more historically accurate accounts versus, like, say, the accounts of, like, I don't know, the Quran or other religious texts that date from antiquity? How do we determine that the texts of the New Testament are the ones that are reliable?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you were listening. Luis, was it, or Lewis?
Lewis?
Lewis,
okay. I don't know if you were listening at the beginning of the broadcast. I was articulating an acronym, the aid. The gospel writers were able to write reliable history intended, and they did. So I, like I said earlier, I think we can start with the temporal proximity of these gospel, these historical accounts, the gospel accounts, to the events that they record. So they're writing within, at least the synoptics are writing within or right at the 30-year mark after the events that they're recording. And relative to other ancient documents, that's pretty darn good, man, because you have biographies of Alexander the Great that are over 400 years removed. You have biographies of Julius Caesar that are ranging from 90 years to 200 years and only six sources. We as Christians, we got these four sources for Jesus, not only the gospel sources, right? But we also have Paul's epistles, which talk about Jesus. And Paul even gives some biographical details, of course, not as much as the gospels, but some biographical details of Jesus's life in order to provide another independent source for the life of Jesus and some of the things that took place in his life. So we have this multiple attestation criterion that is helpful for us to begin approaching the life of Jesus and seeing, hey, is this historically reliable? Concerning the Gospels themselves, we also know that they would have been able to write reliable history. As I mentioned earlier, you know, they weren't just receiving a lecture in a flyby lecture hall, but they lived with Jesus day in and day out. They were within a cultural milieu that highly valued memory skills, right? You have even oral sources that are predating the written account. So, for example, Lewis, if you take St. Paul, this is not in the Gospels, but hey, we can appeal to St. Paul as a historical source for Jesus's life. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verses 3 through 5, where St. Paul says that Christ died, he was buried, and he rose in accordance with the Scriptures, historians date that part, that part of this creed that Paul has in his letter to the Corinthians there as dating to about about 6 to 7 years after the resurrection of Jesus Christ. So you have that oral source, right? Only 6 to 7 years after Jesus's resurrection. Of course, it finds its way in written form in Paul's letter about AD 51 or 52 when he's writing his first letter to the Corinthians. So you have this close temporal proximity criterion that establishes a general trust for these New Testament Christian sources. And also too, Lewis, I would recommend that, you know, you check out my book, Prepare the Way. And in the chapter, I go in summary form on this and have many references and footnotes to where you can trace the research. But I think it's important to point out that we do have, for example, archaeological evidence that's confirming some of the gospel details. So I mentioned earlier the Pool of Bethesda mentioned in John 5. That was discovered in the 19th century. You have a 1961 discovery in Caesarea of an inscription with Pontius Pilate's name. You have also another 1961 discovery of a third century mosaic that had the name Nazareth in it. And that was the first known ancient non-biblical reference to the place of Nazareth. We have coins with the names of the Herodian dynasty, Herod the King, Herod the Tetrarch of Galilee, Herod Agrippa the First, Herod Agrippa the Second. You have a 1990 ossuary discovered that had the Aramaic words Joseph, son of Caiaphas, inscribed on it. All right. So you have archaeological evidence, and that's just the name of few. That's just a sampling. And then also too, Lewis, I think it's important to point out that we have, I mentioned this earlier, that we have non-Christian sources corroborating certain gospel details. So take, for example, the first century Jewish historian Josephus. He mentions Caiaphas the high priest, Annas the high priest, Pontius Pilate, King Herod and his descendants, John the Baptist being killed by Herod. That's a gospel. That's an event that we find in the Gospels. James, the brother of Jesus, he mentions. And he even refers to Jesus as a wise man, a doer of startling deeds, and a figure who was condemned to death by Pontius Pilate. And then we have the first and second century Roman historian Cornelius Tacitus in his work, The Annals, where he refers to a group of people called Christians and describes their leader as Christus, the founder of the name, and he was put to death by Pontius Pilate, procurator of Judea, and the reign of Tiberius. So that's just a sampling, Lewis, of how we can go about establishing the general historical reliability of the Gospels, to at least establish a general trust, a hermeneutic of trust, rather than suspicion. And then we can pull out other tools in the tool bag of historiographical research called the criteria of historiographical research, like multiple attestation and criterion of embarrassment, dissimilarity, and all these other tools that we can use, and sift through the various sayings and events in Jesus's life. Like, for example, this is a great detail here I'll share with you, and then I'll shut up here. But notice, you know, we have the plate on top of Jesus's head, right, in the crucifixion, the King of the Jews.
Yeah.
Many historians point out that that little detail meets some of the criteria for historical reliability. We have independent sources attesting to it. So we have Mark's account and John's account, independent of each other,
right,
attesting.
They're not like that.
They're
Matthew
pulling
and Luke,
from each other. Right,
they're
right.
not taking
it's
that from
independent.
Each other. Yeah.
And also, you have what is called the criterion of dissimilarity here, right? Because the early Christians, they weren't calling him King of the Jews, right? That wasn't a title used by the early church.
Yeah.
But that we find it in the gospel narrative suggests that this is authentic. So you have a couple of criteria here of historical reliability applied to that one little detail to know, hey, the gospel writers, they got it right there. And then we could, you know, pursue a similar line of inquiry to show that these other details, they got it right here and they got it right there. And when you have this converging of evidence and you walk away saying, wow, these gospel writers, we can trust them in what they're telling us about Jesus.
Could I follow up on Lewis's question while you're still there, Lewis? But he also made the point that, well, how would you know that the Quran then is not true or something like that? But there's no one saying necessarily that the Quran is not true. Muhammad went here and went there, just like it says in the Quran.
Right, you're going to have
He didn't do any miracles. He didn't rise from the dead. He just claimed to have visions.
Right.
And so we might say, well, that we don't believe the claim.
Correct.
But that
you might have some historical details that are valid in the Quran, right?
Yeah,
talking
right.
about some things that are historically verifiable,
yeah.
right?
What I'm trying to get at is we don't say the Christian scriptures are true and therefore every other religious text is all lies.
Right,
right?
That is correct. Good point, yeah.
Yeah.
That wouldn't follow.
Yeah.
And you're making a good point that, so maybe the more fundamental question would be why believe in Jesus and what these historical documents are
right.
telling us rather than, you know, Muhammad and following the religion of Islam.
Yeah.
And so that would ultimately boil down to the claims of these two religious figures, right? You don't have Muhammad ever claiming to be God or performing miracles to be a prophet of God. You have
right.
Jesus claiming to be God.
And performing miracles.
And performing miracles, the greatest being the resurrection. And so that's going to demand our attention more. And if we can establish that Jesus claimed to be God, vindicated those claims to be God, historically speaking, to know it, you know, these are historically reliable facts, right?
Yeah.
Well, then anything that would be taught outside of Christianity, no matter which religion we're talking about, contradicts what Jesus teaches, we would know it to be a false gospel, right? It would be false.
Lewis, I want to go back to you because that was a lot. Was that helpful to you?
To an extent, I have a lot of follow-up questions that I'm pretty curious about.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do then. Because you have a lot of follow-up questions and we don't have the time to do a lot of follow-up questions, how about if we'll send you Carlo's book, Prepare the Way.
Awesome.
Because that you had mentioned that
yeah.
would be a good book to look in.
Yeah, there's a chapter in there
then,
where I lay out some of this stuff.
Carlo's on every week. Just call whenever you want as questions come up. So can we, if you hang on the line, Lewis, we'll get your address and send you that. You sound like an adult, so I don't have to ask your parents. I think we can just send him the book. All right. And then really, we'd be delighted if you'd call and continue the conversation. We just have to go to a break right now, and we'll do that and be right back with more on Overcoming Obstacles to Belief in Jesus with Carlo Broussard.
Catholic Answers Live.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
I didn't take my faith seriously, which probably means I never really got it to begin with. No, I didn't want to give up sin. I mean, the reason we sin is because sin is fun. But it's self-love sin. But it's amazing with God's grace how easy trying to not sin it really is.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for whatever reason, we invite you to take another look. Visit CatholicsComeHome.org today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live on this first day of Lent, Ash Wednesday. If you see someone out there with what looks like a dirty mark, a smudge on their forehead, they might have received ashes. If it looks like a cross, you can be pretty sure that they received their ashes. This is a penitential season for Christians. Not all Christians observe this, but many, many Christians observe this penitential season, a season of preparing to meet the Lord in his suffering on Good Friday and to greet him joyfully as we commemorate his resurrection on Easter Sunday. And you can participate in all of that. You can find out, if you just search Lent, if you're not familiar with it, if you don't know what it's all about, you can find out all about it just by searching Lent. And one place you might look, because they have tons of information on the Catholic celebration of Lent, is the website of the United States Catholic Bishops, the USCCB. We are talking now about Jesus, personally, Jesus in particular, and your possible difficulties, obstacles in the way of you embracing a full belief in Jesus, whether it's you or a friend or a loved one. You're welcome to call 888-31-TRUTH. We'll go now to Teal in Cleveland, Ohio, listening on 1260 AM, The Rock in Cleveland. Teal, I'm just going to have to go with this one because I think this must be the line. You there with us, Teal? No? Oh, it dropped. I'm just going to read the question then, because that's why there was a problem. It dropped. I'm having to hear Marie yelling at me through the glass. I didn't know what she was saying. Okay, so
that's unfortunate. Two drops.
I have an atheist friend, Teal writes, who always criticizes God's treatment of people in the Old Testament versus the New Testament. He doesn't believe they are the same God. Mm. Oh, there's a name for that. What can I say to him?
Yeah, so I think whenever this question comes up, and people do struggle with this, and I get it, and it's a legitimate question, you can sort of feel the weight of the question, right? I think we have to take a step back and first ask a more fundamental question, and that is, does God have the divine prerogative to administer punishment, right? Mm-hmm. It all boils down to the question of punishment first. And secondly, if God does have authority to punish wicked nations and wicked people, and even it's within his divine prerogative to cease willing that somebody exists as a consequence of a grievous offense against him, right? Then the question becomes, well, can God deputize somebody in order to carry out that quote-unquote capital punishment? And so if we can answer yes to both of those questions, first, yes, it's within God's goodness, it's coherent with God's goodness and his justice to administer punishment, and that doesn't count against his goodness because punishment is a good within the divine order of things. That is, when there is an offense against God, right? And God can rightfully administer forms of punishment, and he could also deputize people to give them certain revelations to confirm that he is commanding them to carry out some form of capital punishment. Well, then the question now becomes, well, just a varying of degrees of punishment, of why God would relate to the people of Israel in the Old Testament to and punishing them in one way, right, as opposed to how he's going to relate to his people and administer justice and punishment in some other way or some different degree in the New Testament. So if the issue is not punishment in and of itself, well, then it just becomes a varying of degrees. And I think a possible rationale for that is to understand that, as Jimmy Akin, our colleague here, puts it, you know, God was working with blunt knives, so to speak, right? So he's accommodating to the moral and cultural limitations of the Israelites at the time. They didn't have the conceptual framework and the apparatus, right, to receive the loving message that Jesus comes and gives in the New Testament. That, for God to do that for the Israelites in the Old Testament, that would have been like me writing an algebraic equation on the board and asking the second grader to solve it, right? He wouldn't have the conceptual framework. There's more that's going to have to be done before he can achieve that task. So similarly, I think what's happening in the Old Testament is you have God accommodating to these moral and cultural limitations of a primitive people in order to manifest his divine order to them. Namely, sin is bad. To offend God and go against God is very bad. And for these people, one of the ways in which God is going to manifest this order of his to them is to administer the most extreme form of punishment for these grievous offenses, right? Because they don't have the conceptual apparatus of understanding, well, this sin greatly offends the love of God, right? They're just not going to get it yet because you don't have that New Testament revelation of Jesus and the manifestation of God's love and the death of Jesus on the cross. So God's going to have to manifest the ugliness of sin in different ways, you see, as what he will do for the people in the New Testament. And we do this as parents, right? I discipline my 2-year-old Nathaniel very differently than how I discipline my 15-year-old Dominic and my 12-year-old Savannah and my 9-year-old Elijah and even my 6-year-old Catherine. I got all 5 in, so in case they're listening, now nobody's going to fight. Okay?
You were like, oh, I can't just mention 2 of
them. That's right. Yeah. That's right. I got in trouble before for that in the past. So you have a divine accommodation going on. And I think that provides a rationale for the varying degrees of punishment that God administers relative to the Old Testament and to the New Testament. But in no way are these differing degrees of punishment reason to think that there are 2 different gods.
Thank you. I'm sorry that we did lose the call, but thank you very much for the question, Teal. And maybe we can get to speak with you another time. Carlo Broussard is our guest. We're talking about overcoming obstacles to belief in Jesus. We're now going to go to Chris in Duluth, Minnesota, and I'm going to do everything in my power not to drop you, Chris. Chris, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Your question for Carlo.
My question is, I don't know how to simplify this really that much, but how philosophy and Christianity,
okay,
or philosophy and religion in general, there's a lot of people that are very big into philosophy but are not religious. And I'm wondering how do you confront them and tell them that these are the foundation and these are the reasons why Christianity is so good.
Well, what you're asking for is for us to do with what our first pope, right, Saint Peter, inspired by the Holy Spirit, instructed us to do in 1 Peter 3:15: always be ready to give a reason or defense for that hope that is within you, right, concerning Jesus Christ. Do it with gentleness and reverence. But I guess I want to ask first, Chris, what do you mean by religious? Like, in order to convince them to be religious, we can understand that in a couple of different ways. Number one, we could understand it on a natural level and the natural virtue of religion. And secondly, we could understand it on a supernatural level, to be religious concerning how I ought to order my life to God based upon his revelation through his son, Jesus Christ, right? So depending on depending on which target we're looking at in order to shoot our arrow, whether natural religion or supernatural religion, that's going to determine the steps that we're going to take and the arrows that we need to pull from the quiver in order to shoot, right? So let's just say briefly, we're talking about natural religion. Well, in order to convince a philosopher who is quote-unquote not religious, right, we're going to have to establish the existence of God, because the natural virtue of religion is the virtue by which we as rational creatures direct our lives to our ultimate end, which is union with God, right? So natural religion presupposes or assumes God's existence and the order that God inscribes within us to find ultimate happiness in union with Him. So He's our ultimate end. He's our life's goal, okay? So talking to a philosopher who's quote-unquote not religious, we have to first establish that God exists and that we are entirely dependent upon that infinite reality for every moment of our existence. And once we can establish that, and we look at our human nature and how we're ordered to the good, and that ultimate good is God, well, then you have grounds to begin practicing natural religion and ordering our lives to Him, giving Him worship, both in interior act with interior acts of the mind and the heart, as well as exterior acts like sacrifice and stuff, right? Okay, so that would be natural religion. But if we're talking about supernatural religion, Chris, well, therein comes the historical apologetic approach, where we have to look at the historical evidence and ask the question, did the ultimate transcendent reality whom we call God reveal Himself to mankind? And the greatest claimant of that revelation is Jesus Christ. And so we look at the historical we go through a historical investigation and look at the claims of Christ to see if He is that revelation of the one God that we can come to know by way of philosophy. And if He is, well, then now we're in the ballpark of supernatural religion, because He's giving us things, He's revealing things to us that go above and beyond what reason can know. And He's establishing a church in which He's going to entrust these truths, right, to His followers, His disciples. And it's those disciples who are going to speak on behalf of Jesus to tell us how we ought to relate to God in proper ways. Like, what's the precise form of worship that we need to be doing? And when do we worship? And what do we do, right? And certain ways of living our lives that we just can't know by reason alone, but we need God's help to know and reveal to us. And so there we're talking about supernatural religion. So that's how I would parse it out in order to establish some guiding principles there. What do you think of that, Chris?
That was remarkable, and thank you very much for your response. I think that helped a lot.
Okay.
Oh, very.
And yeah, that's awesome. And I would recommend for Chris also to get a hold of my book, Prepare the Way.
Let's send it to him. Just send it to him. We're trying to give away a book today. Everyone keeps dropping, and we can't give away a book. Just don't drop, Chris, and you're going to get a book.
And so, Chris, if you're still listening out there, in my book, I have some chapters of shooting. I give you some arrows, right, to shoot at those two targets that I was just articulating. So I'll keep it simple.
Thank you, Chris. Hang on, because assistant producer Murray is going to get your address, and then we'll send it off to you. Carlo Broussard is our guest. We're talking about overcoming obstacles to Jesus. Carlo?
Yeah?
One of the obstacles for me right now is the next 40 days. How am I going to get through that?
With Jesus' help, brother.
Yes, with Jesus' help, right. but go ahead. You were going to say something.
Nope.
Oh, you looked like you were about to say something.
So, I always got something to say, but go ahead.
Well, it just seems like among the obstacles to Jesus is a kind of cynicism about Jesus in the world today. Like, not an intellectual, like, I've thought this through, but just a cynicism about Jesus. I think it comes from media, but do you have any clue on that? Like, how do we overcome, even in ourselves or in those that we love? Like, don't be so cynical about this. Like, actually investigate it.
You know? Right. So what you mean by cynical is the fact that people just aren't really caring about it or kind of mocking it
It's already been dismissed. Like, we're beyond all that.
Okay. Yeah. You know so what I mean? It's not something that we should even, a rational human person,
bother with.
An intellectually credible person should even bother with.
Yeah.
What has to happen is we have to analyze that and say, okay, what are the assumptions that's driving that? Like, why do you think that it's just child's play and not something that's worthy of investigation for an intellectually credible human being? Like, why do you even think that, right? What are the reasons driving that, as you say, cynicism?
Yeah.
Or that disinterest, right, within Christianity? And I guarantee you it's going to be the supernatural claims of Jesus concerning miracles, right?
Okay.
They're going to think, well, they're just going to reject miracles a priori, right? Like, there's a right out the gate. Well, miracles are bogus. All this stuff that Jesus claims, that's all bogus too, because he's performing a bunch of miracles. But if you're rejecting miracles right out the gate, well, that's actually, getting back to our caller's issue, that's a philosophical problem. Yeah. So we're going to have to get back in the gate and deal with the philosophical issues first before we can come out and start racing for Jesus.
Right. Carlo, thank you very much.
Well, always thank you, Si. It. That was great. Yeah, I had a good time.
All right. You'll come back throughout Lent, though, right? You're not going to abandon us?
Well,
so that our hunger
I'll
pangs
think about
throughout
it.
Lent.
It might be penitential to come back and be with you, Si. That might be actually a good thing for
yes,
my
come and do
penance.
Your penance. Hey, tomorrow, 2 hours of open forum. See you then, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.